your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Alchemy. Today, I'm thrilled to have Tim Seymour, founder and chief investment officer at Seymour Asset Management, and also a face you've probably seen on CNBC's Fast Money. Tim, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be here today. Looking forward to our conversation.
Lots going on in the space, lots to talk about. But you know, I think most people have seen you on Fast Money, and I think we've seen you kind of being on CNBC as a frequent contributor, especially in cannabis on the network. So talk to us a little bit about how you really got involved bringing this vertical on a news network.
Instigation is maybe a good choice of words. So great to be on Alchemy. By the way, if I'm not the first to point this out, Alchemy is one of the great live albums by Dire Straits that came out in 1984, 85. You probably weren't born yet, but I was.
I was. Come on.
It's happens to be one of my favorite live albums of all time. So Alchemy rocks. And great to be here. CNBC. The background there also is just that, you know, my career in the world of finance and investing is such that I found myself getting asked to appear on CNBC to talk about emerging markets and resources and commodities, which are kind of my earlier life expertise. I lived in Russia. I lived in different parts of Latin America at certain times. I spent a lot of time investing in certainly that part of the world. And at one point, CNBC realized that I might have an ability to BS a little bit. No, I'm kidding. As in, like, I like to talk, and I like to talk about what I know about. And the format for Fast Money, which is the show I've been on for 13 years, is one that is it's about talking about markets. It's about talking about stock selection, top down, bottom up, but it's also about trying to just explain and have a view on the entire spectrum of markets and risk. And so, you know, that's the background. And in 2006, they put me on Fast Money as kind of the proverbial sixth man in off the bench. And then one of the guys moved on to something and they asked me to do it full time. And at the time, I was running a hedge fund, so it was a pretty intense day of doing my thing all day, and then running off to the Nasdaq to do Fast Money, and largely did that through 2013 when I was running a long short equity hedge fund, and then in 2014 I started moving into some private investments and some other things, which included cannabis, and so you know, just the framework for cannabis for me. And the framework for then talking about it on the network is that cannabis to me in the early days was so much like investing in emerging markets, in that it was very much a top-down trade. It was very much a legislative macro, kind of call on what was going on in the world, consumption trends, legislation, obviously the politics around it. And in many cases, the investment themes or the investment opportunities were just reminded me of some of the capital markets dynamics, including lack of liquidity, lack of real institutional investors, lack of real strong information, and therefore rolling up your sleeves and meeting with company management and understanding the macro and trying to make a call on some of these big events was exactly what cannabis seemed like to me. And frankly, we'll cut to that later, but it's exactly what it is. And it's of course, shaping up as I expected, which is this is going to be one of the great consumption trends of all time and one of the great sophisticated consumer products industries that's sitting right next to, some very well-established, linear positioned industries right now. And the conversation about cannabis was as simple as, 2017, those of us that had been investing in the sector for a couple of years started to see the obvious opportunities to connect a broader both investor group, broader opportunity set, but also a broader audience to what we were looking at and investing in. And for me on CNBC, it was very obvious the network needed to talk about this. The network needed to talk about these really exciting global consumption trends, demographics, the things that were going to be a critical part of the cannabis story. Obviously, there was a medical, you know, adult kind of breakdown, but you know, everything that comes along with the ultimate use case efficacy of why cannabis is becoming such an important part of the consumer landscape, frankly, was something I brought to my producer and I said, hey, we need to talk about this. He said, great, Tim. I went to some of the higher ups at the network just to make sure that no one was going to think I was too weird and off the wall. And it wasn't going to be a problem. And you know, I mean, I've spent my career hopefully building a reputation where I'm a thoughtful investor and, you know, have run sophisticated investment products. And I just didn't want the misperceptions of the industry that might be out there to be a problem for me. So I was very cautious about talking about the industry. But when I finally decided enough's enough, let's really frame this for people, because I think we'd be doing them a huge service by outlining this trend. They said, off you go, you know, disclose, let people know what you're doing. And obviously go through the normal protocols we go through on the network when we talk about where we're investing, so that it's not looked as, so there's no conflicts, et cetera. And then my producer said, great. And off I was to talk about maybe, Canada or California going full rec, in Jam 2018. And there I was talking about the top down. There I was, Melissa Lee dished to me after a lead in. And I said, yeah, let's talk about cannabis. This is a very exciting consumption story. And next thing I know, my executive producer was running B-roll of, you know, Cheech and Chong or Jeff Spicoli in a cloud of smoke falling sideways out of a van in Fast Times and bong water sound effects. And it was tough to finish the segment because there was, they tried to turn it into a parody. And look, I stayed in the pocket and threw the pass and didn't get sacked. I mean, the bottom line is the best thing that I could do at that time. And for the next couple of times I talked about it when, my producer is a great TV producer, a great guy, and someone that wasn't looking to sack me. But he I'm not sure he understood exactly what the goal was there. And the goal for me was to be a thought leader, and the goal was to shape the conversation that really wasn't being had on financial TV. As someone that was investing, and someone that had seen these trends in other industries before, and to try to point it out. So that's a long answer. But I started talking about it on CNBC, call it mid 2017, and the response from the industry was incredible. It was humbling because a lot of folks saw that the issue was raised on CNBC. Which whether you like it or not, like I'm a very proud CNBC participant and have been doing it a long time, and I think it's a world-class financial news network. And I think it's the gold standard. And I think no matter what, the minute you start talking about something in finance and in the markets on CNBC, people are going to listen. And people heard this story. So CEOs, investors, people in the industry, folks that were involved on the regulatory side and conversations in Washington and whatnot were reaching out. And I was, as I said, I was humbled because while I felt I had a good stake on the industry and there's people that have been investing in the industry for 10 years. There are people that socially and operationally had been, some of the founding players in the industry, which I didn't feel like I was. And they were reaching out to me saying, hey, thanks. Great job. Great story. We're behind you. And that kind of began the role of being a thought leader in the industry, in addition to being an investor. And I'm really happy to have that position right now.
Yeah, no, you've created a really great name for yourself and a great reputation. And I think I was really excited to have you on the show today, just because I feel like the last week alone has been, I think, in my mind, I mean, we obviously have been dealing with a pandemic, but we've really, this country in particular has really faced one of the toughest weeks, you know, in history, obviously with, you know, all of the tensions, protests, you know, the looting, everything that was going on in this country. And really in the last week, all of the cannabis stocks that I've been really looking at have been thriving. And so, you know, it's kind of, I kind of scratch my head like, hey, we've dealt with such an incredible crisis, yet you see a lot of these trading in the green right now.
I think there's a confluence of factors at work for the positive price action in cannabis. And I think we're largely at least talking about the public markets, even though I think we both and a lot of folks that listen to Alchemy are really focused on the private markets. And there's not one that's better or worse than the other. The reality is that public markets, by definition, provide benchmarks every single day on pricing. So that's our reference point here. But I think the private markets largely have recovered as well. What's happened is there were technical factors in the market that I think put it under significant duress. They included the lack of liquidity, lack of institutional sponsorship. I think a lot of insiders in the industry were, so why were stocks and why were the markets crashing and plummeting for the preceding 9 months? You know, there's a combination of factors that included some technical ones. Look, valuations really have never made sense. So it was easy to, at some point, to wait for, you know, a broader risk environment, and also just the reality of cannabis running into some macro and bottom-up issues, lack of access to capital. It's clear the industry doesn't have traditional access to capital. The valuations didn't make sense. And there's a lot of, you know, poor operators. And then a lot of folks that jumped in with expectations of you know, monumental growth out of the gates and profitability that just wasn't there, and frankly, largely still isn't there. So markets are ultimately, you know, a weighing machine or a voting machine and a barometer of assessing all of those things at once. Sometimes they're efficient, sometimes they're inefficient. Cannabis markets have been largely inefficient on the way up and the way down. What's happened in the last 3 months, and let's just, you know, that's a very broad overview of why markets were under a lot of duress. But largely, look, in the last couple months, in the post-COVID environment, the current COVID environment, it was just coincident also with some of the biggest, most important players in the US, at least traded in the public markets, were actually delivering fantastic results, relative at least to the industry, relative to themselves, and largely in absolute terms, considering where they were in their growth model. But I'm talking about Trulieve. I'm talking about GTI. I'm talking about Curaleaf. I'm talking about Cresco Labs. I'm talking about TerrAscend. I'm talking about companies that you know, I think are well positioned, well run, have had a pretty good approach to capital allocation. No one's been perfect, but I think the news flow bottom up has been good. I think the top down news flow, obviously, COVID-19 quickly elicited this mandate that cannabis was an essential industry. An essential industry for a lot of different reasons, of course. And I think we all know that it's because you know how the cannabis plant is viewed largely, hopefully, which is that there is a medicinal element to this, if not entirely, and that it should be available in the same way that other you know, consumer products have been made available. It's not to arbitrate what people should be consuming. It's the determination was made. It's an essential industry. It is an essential industry, and it's essential not only from the consumer's perspective, but it's also essential from the employment perspective. And I'm not sure who is dubbing these terms in Washington or on a state level to then, you know, make these classifications. But there's no question one of the byproducts of COVID-19 and looking at the fallout of the economy is the importance of cannabis on this economy in this country. Certainly on a state and local municipal level, you can't tell me that those politicians don't know the importance of the jobs it's provided and the income that it's started to show to state and local budgets. So, earnings, macro, natural evolution of working through a very difficult capital market cycle. We haven't changed the fact that companies still have a difficulty accessing capital, but that there are good operators, and they're not all good operators. There's companies that are going out of business. They should go out of business. There are folks that set up that never really were doing anything other than trying to set up a structure to be an investment vehicle for a exciting trend without really ever being operators, without ever really investing in proper infrastructure. And then there's massive misallocation of capital. So that's what the industry has responded to. Let's be clear, up until the last couple of days, the global market backdrop also was very supportive off the bottom. So high beta assets, high risk assets are going to outperform on the way up in the same way they underperform on the way down. And you know, you can't tell me that cannabis doesn't fall under that classification as well. As much as I want to tell you this is uniquely a cannabis story, you know, what have other high risk assets done in off the bottom? They've outperformed the S&P. They've outperformed mega cap U.S. tech companies that are seen as the safest balance sheets and you know, the growth stories that at least are growth for a reasonable price. So that's the explanation of cannabis. It's not going to be a simple ride. I'm not telling you we're going to the moon here. I'm telling you that good companies are starting to perform. You've shaken out a lot of bad players. You've had an opportunity to reassess risk. And I think investors have more opportunities and a little more liquidity. And that's where we are.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to jump back quickly because you mentioned something that, you know, frequently comes up pretty much on every single episode. It doesn't matter who's on the show. But, you know, as we've kind of moved, you know, past this, you know, initial phases of the pandemic, you know, cannabis being deemed essential has really changed the viewpoints of not just a lot of states and politicians, but a lot of the folks across the country. And, you know, I think I saw something that came across my desk the other day where, aside from trying to, you know, pick up on the revenue, right, tax dollars in particular for states where it's not legal, you've got governors from all sorts of other states pulling up even, you know, additional insight into cannabis. I think, you know, in California, you know, have Governor Newsom, you know, he basically was like, look, the whole idea of legalization of marijuana for California was a civil rights matter in addition to everything else. So I think you're starting to see, you know, every state, especially I'm in New York, you're in New York, you know, it's only legal from a medicinal perspective. But, you know, I think we're looking at this every single day. You'd see Cuomo talking about it. You know, we need the tax dollars. We need the revenue. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. So I feel like kind of post-COVID, I mean, hopefully if we ever get out of this, but we're going to start seeing a lot of states that are literally going to legalize this from a financial perspective. I think we will start seeing this happen a lot faster than we had originally anticipated before this pandemic.
I just think that cannabis has always been in the cross section of economic, legislative, and social issues in this country that are right at the forefront of what's going on in this country. So, and I think it's coincident, and there's an interrelationship. But look. I'm sorry, you know, the cannabis industry has always had to have a thoughtful approach to social issues that are critical in this country and are obviously front and center right now. The criminal justice dynamics around cannabis historically and legalization and the mistreatment of certain demographic groups and ethnicities. And it's just, you know, cannabis has had to think about the entire spectrum of issues attached to it because it is such a complex industry with of course, legal regulatory evolution that needs to happen. We have to understand where we've come from. But, you know, back to New York, we sit in New York. I mean, there's a reason why cannabis in the adult market is not in full operation. And it's not because there isn't full support or at least enough majority support to legalize it. It's a criminal justice issue. It's a social justice issue. And New York's going to get it right. And so, you know, in the context of what's going on right now in terms of the protests and the sensitivities and the pain, New York legislators are trying to get actually, you know, five bills through that are focused on both, you know, police reform, but also as it's going to relate to cannabis for adult use. And that's not just opportunistic. That's part of what this has been about. So, you know, Illinois has done a great job in assessing these issues. And I think hopefully has inspired New York to do at least as good of a job. So, yeah, this is part of what's going on right now. And the last month and a half or 2 months, or, you know, we've been in the middle of COVID now, really for 3 months intensively. The cannabis industry has, you know, I think shown not only how essential it is, how there are haves and have nots coming out of COVID-19, and cannabis is a have without question. Companies have pivoted. Companies have been, you know, thoughtful on how to address the issues how to address their employees. And I'm not saying every company's done everything right, but and by the way, you know, cannabis dispensaries, investments that I have and, you know, have been looted and rolled, you know, so it's not as if they haven't been also suffering along with other industries with the fallout of the social issues.
Totally. So I think just from a, you know, from a stock perspective, especially on, let's just say, the Canadian exchanges, I hear every day people who have never invested in cannabis that are starting to see this movement and they want to get in. You know, any insights, you know, especially because you're kind of going through so much data and really analyzing so much of what's happening in the markets, any type of assistance or, you know, thought process around people who want to get into, you know, investing in the cannabis space? Like, what should they be on the lookout for? What should they be looking at? You know, I think a lot of people are like, I have no idea about this space, but I know I want to invest.
Yeah. So there's obviously the public markets, what you can invest in, what you cannot invest in. And then there's the private markets. And just to set the table here for how I am set up. On the public equity side, I am a portfolio manager of a cannabis ETF. The ETF is ticker CNBS, no surprise there, for cannabis. And it can invest in the U.S. listed entities that trade. It can invest in some of the Canadian listed securities that trade, but the, you know, the clear caveat is we can't invest in anything that is not fully federally legal. So right. So we can't invest in US MSOs. We can't invest in plant touching US companies, and that's unfortunate. We can invest in the Canadian companies that are listed and that trade here. That obviously are not violating U.S. federal dynamics, but are operating under federally legal framework, whether it's in Canada or around the world. We can invest in CBD. We can invest in those medical entities that are approved to trade. And it's evolving. And I can just tell you, it's not a perfect approach. But from the public markets perspective, There's still a lot investors can do to better understand how to invest. And what I do on the portfolio side, which is stock selection, is a function of understanding balance sheet issues, who's got the ability to navigate a difficult capital markets environment, both now in the COVID-19, you know, markets fallout, but even before that, who's got a management team that's a sophisticated, you know, call it a traditional experienced consumer products management team, not just guys that popped up opportunistically in cannabis, who are companies that are have an allocation towards capital that's thoughtful, who are companies that are not necessarily trying to have a scattershot approach to putting assets all over the world, but actually, you know, potentially are actually just trying to be very profitable and very deep in certain parts of the world. Those are the things I think investors should spend time on. They should try to spend as much time as they can looking at the capital structure and regulatory filings to understand a little bit about where there are lockups, liquidity dynamics, but dilution dynamics and things that I think, you know, some investors really don't think about, but there's been a lot of very dilutive stock equity issuance in cannabis, and that's unfortunate, because I think the world is that's how capital markets work. A lot of investors might go out and buy a stock, and 2 days later, there's a major dilutive equity issuance, and that stock's down 30%. Investors, you can spend some time on that, and that's certainly what we try to do on the ETF side. In the private markets, I've teamed up with Jason Wild over at JW Asset Management, and we run a traditional. Hedge fund approach to investing in mostly private companies in the sector. Gives us a lot more ability to navigate the entire spectrum, and allows us, on some level, to get a little deeper into the capital structure. Obviously, private investing is got much different liquidity dynamics and lockups, and it's something that actually we use to our advantage where we can. And it allows us to get closer to company management and hopefully be allied and positioned to be supportive of company management. And in exchange, we sit in a better place in the cap structure than a common equity player might. On the hedge fund side, I would just say, we can invest anywhere. We're trying to find companies that are, again, profitable now. Not necessarily profitable at some time in the future, but it's about great management teams. It's about great allocation to capital thematically. I think we want to be we want to be in limited license states. We like, the vertically integrated nature of some companies, but frankly, there's a lot of inefficiency in that, and there's a lot of capital requirements for that. And I wouldn't say that we're necessarily thinking about that at all. And as it relates to ancillary and as it relates to the services and some of the logistics, ERP, IT parts of the industry, we think that's fascinating. We think that traditional logistics, ERP, IT software is going to support this industry in the same way it's supporting other industries. And we don't necessarily have to be finding those companies that are only focused on cannabis that do that, right? So anyway, there's it's a really exciting time for investing in the industry. I think the good news for investors is that valuations are a lot more attractive. I'm not telling you everything's cheap. Things have gotten cheaper. And in some cases, there are companies that are trading at a discount to maybe even cash they have in their balance sheet. Although those are companies that largely aren't necessarily, needing your capital. Or if they are, it's about finding the proper strategic balance between the investor and the management team. And I think that's something we spend a lot of time on.
Awesome. Well, really good insight there. And obviously, lots of changes and, lots of movement as we start to see, more states coming on board, more states legalizing, then hopefully at some point, when it is federally legal, probably a ton of investing that's going to really shortfall after that. So appreciate the insight. And, Tim, if you've been listening to the show, you kind of know we talk a little bit about business in the beginning, and then we finish it with some quick fire questions for you.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Super easy. You ready?
Easy is good. Yeah.
Okay. This one's probably the hardest one.
All right.
How would you describe the color orange to a blind person?
Fiery. Hot, sunset.
I was going to say, Tim, they can't see. What's the most ridiculous thing that you've ever bought?
The most ridiculous thing I ever bought. It was a Datsun 240Z that looked great and was totally rusted out underneath. I didn't bother to inspect it. I drove it for about 3 hours, and effectively the bottom of the chassis fell out as I was driving down the road at the beach one summer. And it was a very painful, expensive, idiotic purchase.
Oh, we've all had one of those. What's your worst example of procrastination?
Knowing I've got a company call to a management team that spent taking time out of their day to meet with me and you know, want to prepare for that call, have left myself 2 hours, have left myself 2 days, and find myself scrambling 15 minutes before the call because 19 things have distracted me and I've just not rolled up my sleeves. I mean, I think that may not be procrastination. That may be also just there's so much going on in this industry that staying focused is really tough, but you have to do it.
I'll agree with you there. Okay, here's a fun one. Do you eat food that's past its expiration date if it still smells and looks okay?
All the time. I mean, I have a separate fridge in my home, which is mine, and it's a beer fridge, so I don't I can have my beer really cold, and I don't freeze my wife's lettuce. But my wife will throw cold cuts in there because I hate wasting food. And it's not just, you know, all the really righteous dynamics of, you know, the people starving in this world, but I just, I'll eat almost anything. I hate to say it, but, I'm still walking the earth today and I'm not that worried about it.
There you go. Okay. Last question. What did you think that was going to be absolutely amazing, but it actually turned out to be horrible?
You know, wow.
It's a good one to think about, right?
There's a number of cases that, you know, dare I say, for example, I went to see the Stones in Vegas. I'd never seen the Stones before. And I didn't see them. And, you know, I'm not sure what someone would describe as their heyday. But I saw them out in Vegas about a year ago. And I spent a lot of money, went out of my way to get to that show. It was, you know, as a music lover, and, you know, longtime fan, the experience was horrible. The experience was horrible because the sound wasn't great. It felt very cookie cutter. It felt, you know, I just felt like I was part of a machine, you know? I think music often brings that kind of stuff up, but, you know, ordering online can you know, ordering clothes online. It's why I actually think that brick and mortar.
That's my biggest one. Oh God, that's the biggest. I order everything online, and it looks amazing when I see it, and then it comes. I'm like, what the hell is this? What did I order?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You gotta feel things in the store, right? You got to feel the material. You got to see how it fits. It's hard to do that stuff online.
Totally, man. Don't worry, Macy's and all these other kind of brick and mortars. I mean, dinosaurs like myself like to come in there and try the stuff on. So
yeah, I do too.
I'll see you there.
We go shopping together. All right, Tim. Well, listen, it's been great to have you on the show. I think great, you know, definitely need to have you come back in the fall or probably early winter and talk about all the changes that we're going to see.
Yeah, I think we just got started here. Alchemy's doing a great job of bringing a lot of different perspectives on the industry and industry leaders, and it's great to be here. I'm thrilled to be here. Let's do it again.
Awesome. It's great to have you on. Great to get your insight, and really appreciate it, Tim.
Be safe. Talk to you soon.
You too. This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in, and if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.